This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Thank you, Eduardo, for this generous introduction, and thank you, Aaron and Eduardo, for inviting me. I'm not here alone. On the walls, I collaborated with four other women. We worked on this exhibition for several years, and implicitly, we also collaborated with the photographers, the photographed person, and all the others that were involved in the making of these photographs and this photographic event. But I'll come back to it later. When Aaron and Eduardo invited me to speak tonight, in the space where the exhibition is, I asked them if they want me to speak directly on the exhibition, and as you didn't see the exhibition yet, so it doesn't make sense that I will speak about what you didn't see yet, but I will try to contextualize it in a way in relation to my work and in relation to questions that preoccupy me and the way that they encounter the context or the umbrella of projects that both Eduardo and Aaron are working on, which is photographies in conflict. And I will dwell on photography and on conflict a little bit separately and in connection in relation to some of the projects that I did with photography and the way that I'm trying to work with photography on different level, assuming that photography was not really invented in the 19th century as we have been told, as we have been taught, as for several years, maybe myself, I misled my students to believe that it was invented in the beginning of the 19th century. And just today, I have a blog on the Photo Museum blog, and I encourage you to look at it. Imagine that photography was invented in 1492. Imagine that photography is not only a technology that we associate with this tool that we call camera, but photography is another layer, another technological layer of destruction that started in 1492. And if we go back to 1492, it enables us a little bit to understand photography not as a Swiggenary discipline or area or technology, but to understand it in the imperial context. But it took me several years to understand this, and I would like to take you slowly into an itinerary that I, or into a journey, I don't know, that I started several years ago, I think 10 years ago, I think it's 10 years since I published The Civil Contract of Photography, and I think, in retrospect, that when I published The Civil Contract of Photography, when I wrote it, when I researched for it, what I actually did is providing my first potential history of photography, but I didn't call it like that at the time. But now I would like slowly to take you into this journey and to show it through different images. And as you can see, from this first image that I selected, I will not start with a focus on photography as technology, but on a different technology, which is the technology of making people to emerge in front of the camera as embodiment of political categories. And this is a very rare image, I would say, not because others could not have been taken, not because there is something sensational in this image, but this is an image from 47 in the Israeli Jewish archives. It is classified as the beginning of the independence war. And this is a rare image, not because it is the only image in which, or the only image that is classified as the beginning of the independence war, but it is an image in which you see Palestinians not already as the categories that were forced upon them, upon their bodies, by the state of Israel. Here they are just protesting against this mean and evil idea to partition their land, to partition their homeland, to partition their the place where they are living. And they are just going in the street. As you can see, the children are in the front line, which means it's not a dangerous situation. They don't believe that in a minute they will be expelled from their country. And they are acting as, you know, banal political subjects in the street. And this became a very rare photograph because the images that most of us encounter of Palestinians are images of dispossessed people, of people who are rioters, people who are threatening the sovereignty of the state of Israel, people who are born refugees, which means they are in a way worldless, because their world was destroyed, so they are worldless, as if there was no Palestinian art, as if there was no Palestinian photography, as if there was nothing Palestinian, because the state of Israel destroyed Palestine. So here is a banal image of inhabitants of a country that are protesting against this evil idea of imperial powers like the British Empire and like all the other who founded the UN and decided that they have to partition Palestine. And why do I bring this image to start the conversation about conflict? Because in each and every text that you will find about this area called today Israel, you would see this, you know, idiom of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as if there were always two sides that were in a conflict. So this naturalization of the conflict, as if it was always there, is what I tried to challenge through the way that I addressed photography. And I'm using the verb addressed photography and not read photography because I think that we do not only read, or we do not have only to read photographs. When we speak about photography, we are speaking about a political ontology. People are coming together and there is a camera there. But this doesn't mean that they are reducible to the photograph that then we will read as if when we see Palestinian, we would recognize the Palestinian as a refugee, as if Palestinians were always refugees. So starting with this image is for me an opportunity to take you into this, let's use Walter Benjamin idiom of constituent violence, the moment when Palestinians are about to become the way that they are defined by the sovereign power of the imperial state, the Israeli state. And if you will look at this image from 47, you see we are attending a disaster, right? You see that there is a kind of disaster, there is explosion that was perpetrated by an Israeli, not an Israeli, sorry, there was not yet Israel, by a Jewish militia in the oil refinery in Haifa. But what interests me here is not what they did. What interests me here is that among these people, I don't know who are these people here, but I know that these are Palestinians. Here they can be both Palestinian and Jews. But what interests me is that they are together looking at the catastrophe, at this spectacular image of the bombing. And this is an image that will also disappear from the imagery that we will encounter in the last 70 years, because if there is a moment of catastrophe, a moment of emergency, Jews and Palestinians will be immediately divided. The Jews will be protected and Palestinians will be made suspect. So what I'm trying to tell you through this photograph is that I am not only looking at the photograph, I am looking at what I am calling the political ontology of photography. I am looking at the way that photography intervenes in this situation where people are playing different positions that are imposed upon them by sovereign or imperial power, and they negotiate them the way that they can negotiate them. So these two first images were part of an exhibition that I created, a photographic exhibition called, in English, From Palestine to Israel. I don't remember the subtitle, doesn't matter. And here you see a little bit, a glimpse of this archive, and I brought it just in order to show you how, is there any way to point to what I'm showing? No. Okay, so I'll be there. So what interests me here, you see these are images of expulsion, which means the reshaping of the body politic. And as I'm speaking about photography also in relation to a body politic that is made out of photographers, photograph persons, spectator, the state also we have a body politic. So here this is the moment when the body politic is shaped through the evacuation of Palestinians from their land and the declaration of a state, of a sovereign state, the state of Israel. This is the moment of declaration. And in political theory, which I part away from it, because political theory doesn't account for the imperial world under which we live. In political theory, in Schmitt, for example, when he speaks about sovereign power, he speaks about a miraculous moment when sovereignty emerges, or Derrida, that reiterates, I think, a similar gesture, he speaks about the Derrida, through the voice of Benjamin, about the transformation of violence into law. So this transformation of violence into law is not a miraculous moment. It took at least 1 year and a half to expel 750,000 Palestinians from their land, and it took 70 years to keep them outside, which means me and other Jews, with our passport, with our nationality, we actually prevent them from coming back to their land. So this was part of this exhibition, and what I'm trying also to show you through this is the way that I'm working with archives. So what I'm doing, I'm not only using archival material, I'm recomposing them in order to use the archive as a tool in this political ontology. And out of this exhibition came this term of potential history. This was not yet potential history of photography, this was potential history in a more global way, and what I tried to do is to start to intervene in images in a physical way, in a material way. And here what you see, for example, is that I folded the photograph. From the other side, I folded this photograph. And what happened when I, I'm folding, unfolding these photographs, here, for example, you could mistake this situation for a group of girls that are about to go to a journey, to a field trip. And I folded this photograph deliberately because we tend not to recognize the perpetrators when we look at Palestinians. So I folded and unfolded in order to make present the Jews that actually evacuated, that actually expelled Palestinians from their land, in order not to accept these consequences of the conflict that makes Jews here and Palestinians there. The effort, potential history, is an effort to create a common ground on which both perpetrators and victims, or both Jews and Palestinians, are standing. And in the same way, when you will look more carefully at the walls around, when we worked on this exhibition, collaboration, potential history of photography, the idea was also to look at each and every act of photography as a degree zero of collaboration. And what do I mean by degree zero? I mean that in each and every act of photography, there is necessarily a collaboration. And when I'm speaking about collaboration, I'm not speaking about it in an idyllic way, as if to collaborate with someone is necessarily a generous action or necessarily something utopic or idyllic that will yield something good in the world. Collaboration is also is also a violent dimension. not necessarily, not always, but collaboration is a manifold of situation where people are getting together. And we were trained to believe that photography is either the history of technology or the history of photographers, mainly white male photographers. This is how the narrative is built in so many of the foundations of our understanding of photography. And looking at photography from the perspective or from the lens of collaboration is an opportunity to account for this moment when people are getting together, even if they are socially or culturally trained to believe that they are incarnating or embodying a position that is distinct from the from others who are participating in the situation, for example, photographers. In the history of photography, we know very little about the photographed persons, we know much about the photographers. So the idea of a potential history of collaboration was to account for this political ontology where photography is the event when people are coming together. And different situations emerge out of this coming together. But this coming together is always there. So coming back to potential history, what I try to do in Potential History of Palestine 48 is go to this moment of 48 and try to understand how the conflict was the outcome of a mass enterprise of violence. There was no conflict prior to 48 when Palestinians were expelled from Palestine. The conflict was shaped as part of the violence of expelling Palestinians and transforming them into intruders. And if you follow the events of the last couple of months, under the title of the Great March of Return, when Palestinians are being killed on a daily basis by the Israeli state because they are trying to cross the border, what you see there is the reiteration of the same violence, constitutive violence of 48, that created this conflict and made of Palestinians outsiders to their homeland and made of the Jews the guardians of the law of the Jewish state. So potential history is potential history of violence, not in order to say that this violence is unavoidable, but in order to acknowledge this violence as what shaped the situation, what shaped the political ontology of this encounter between people, in order to imagine its transgression. Coming back to this photograph, for example, these little girls that are 70 years ago, they were little girls when they were expelled. Today, they or their descendants are still refugees. As long as they are refugees, I am still a descendant of perpetrators. As long as they will be kept as refugees, I will be kept and I will inherit it. I will hand it over to my children, this position of perpetrators. So the potential history is an attempt to account for the way or for the situation where all those who share the world are implicated in the violence that is in this world, and the only way no longer to be a perpetrator is to let others no longer be refugees. So, as I said, this is a folded exhibition that I share with people. When I show it, I don't show it on the walls, I show it among people, and we fold and unfold together as a way to work with photographs, as a way to work with photography, as a way to intervene and not to accept the photograph as the ultimate outcome of the photographic event when people came together. So in this context, I wanted to bring an image that I used in that book that I mentioned that I published 10 years ago, The Civil Contract of Photography. And as you see, this is not a photograph. But for me, this stood for the untaken photograph or for the inaccessible photograph. At the time, there were many women, pregnant women, who were forced to have their baby die in the checkpoint because they were not allowed to reach the hospital because of the system of checkpoints. And as I couldn't find photographs of this situation, for me, this painting, painted by Faten Nastas, and you see the man negotiating with the soldiers, trying to let his wife cross the checkpoint, and she's not allowed to cross the checkpoint, hence she's giving birth at the checkpoint, and the baby will die. And for me, this painting, I don't want to relate to it only as a painting, because I know that this situation took place. There were many of them. I know that cameras were there, because cameras are taking photographs of the occupation of Palestine, and we are all the time fed with the same iconography. And these images were not proud of it. So this image stands for the untaken photograph. And why it is important to me in this attempt to formulate a non-imperial ontology of photography. Because we were trained again in our understanding of photography to read only photographs that we were given with. But what happened when we don't have photographs of situations that we know that were taken? This led me to understand this distinction between the photograph and the event of photography, and to understand the photograph as a contingent outcome of the event of photography. Here, the testimony of the women, or the, her husband, or the painter, that this photographic event took place, this testimony stands for the photograph that was not produced. So this led me to understand that there is an event of photography that is mediated by the camera, but not necessarily yields photograph. And there is another event of photography that is mediated by a photograph that we don't necessarily have access to the camera. So now I would like to leave for a moment Palestine here, and I would like to move to a different project that I did, The Family of Men. So The Family of Men, I don't know, for people at my age, it was a very influential catalog on the one hand. I didn't see the exhibition, it was too early for me to see, but it was a very influential catalog, it was in 55. But it was also accompanied, when I encountered the catalogue, with a very influential text by Roland Barthes that said that actually we don't have to see the exhibition, because the exhibition universalizes what is there and dehistoricizes the photographs, hence no reason to look at the images. Which means that what Roland Barthes said for people like me who were trained by French philosophy and continental philosophy, which I part away from it in the last couple of years, the exhibition was reducible to its author, which is Edward Staken, the curator. But think about it, there are at least 500 images in this exhibition, which means at least 500 photographers. There are at least thousands of photographed persons. And the exhibition was the most viewed exhibition, let's say, in that decade. It circulated around the world because there was US government money that funded it in order to shape, you know, the new world order with all the quotation marks that you want, which means it was seen, it was viewed by 10 million people around the world. So look at it, how many people, and we are being told that the exhibition is taken. So the first intervention that I did in this exhibition was to transform it into an archive. Not because an archive is a panacea, is really the way that we can redempt everything, but Transforming it into an archive was a way to start to materially intervene in what I am seeing, starting to undo this authorial position of the curator and then the photographer, and start to engage with what I'm seeing, what I'm viewing, in a different way. Start to engage with a different aspect of the exhibition. So creating this archive was just a kind of beginning. And as I said, reducible to Edward Steichen, so here you see really a kind of iconic image of the master that is viewing the 500 images and selecting them and giving the world this iconic exhibition. But here you see a more accurate image of the work that involved dozens of people that worked with Steichen. So here you see one facet of the collaborative work, because you cannot imagine that 500 images that were selected out of several hundreds of thousands of images, all this work was done only by one curator. There was a big team behind the scene that worked on this exhibition. But as I said, this is just, you know, the professional team. We are speaking about a collaboration of different kind between photographed persons, photographers, and spectators. The exhibition was very influenced, as Steichen spoke about it, by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And let me open another front. I spoke about the sovereign state, I spoke about photography as a medium or an area or a discipline that was also built upon this idea of experts. And we have also the experts of human rights. We have a kind of top-down discourse of human rights that was monopolized by imperial states, by those states that imposed colonialism on the world, on the entire world, that imposed the mode of decolonization following 45, and that imposed also this discourse of human rights as if people were born with no world. Everybody was born equal to everybody else. What does it mean? It means that we have no world in which we were born. So the exhibition was tied to this idea of the UN Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the discourse that was given by people who continued to have colonies all around the world and never paid for these colonies until today, as we all know very well. So what I try to do is to ask myself, okay, there is an exhibition, 500 images, I already archived it in a way that I can play with them. How I can continue this idea of human rights in relation to this exhibition? And why I insisted on working on this exhibition? Because as 10 million people view this exhibition, there is something in common in this world that went through globalization. So I wanted to build upon this common imaginary, let's say. But rather than viewing it, what was either viewed by Steichen in those images or projected on Steichen that is in the images, I wanted to play with them a little bit differently. So I took the very iconic composition of the entrance of the exhibition, and I started, as you can see, to mark lines on it, which means to try to understand the composition. And once I foregrounded or outlined the composition, I wanted to see how I can replace the composition with other images. The exhibition opens with a composition of images of courting women, which is a very... There is a lot to say about it. It's too banal for me now to dwell on it. So from the family of men, this composition, what I try to do is to look at images that were taken in the same time. The images of the family of men were taken, most of them, except one or two, one image from the Civil War and another image that preceded it, were taken from the one decade before the exhibition was shown, which is between 45, the end of World War II, and 55. So I looked at other images coming from other places. And also from the US and France and Europe, as was the majority of images in the exhibition. And I try to see how people imagine their rights, not from a top-down discourse where there is no world. Because when we are being told, as it is in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights or in the Declaration of Man and Citizen, the French Declaration of the 18th century, an imperial power that has so many colonies in the world, or as we have been told by the Euro Constitution, that everybody was born free, and you know exactly what was in the US when everybody was born free. So as we have been told by all these declarations of equality, as if there is no world, and we are speaking about this kind of worldless figure, to use Hannah Arendt's word, what I try to do is to look at the world out of which people are claiming what they deserve to have. So I started to look at different images of strike, different images of protest. And what you see, you know, when you protest, you cannot protest more than 5, 6, 7 hours. You are becoming tired. So you need blankets, right? Because you have a world, and your world is not made only of these kind of empty ideas. It is made also of your needs. It is made also of your comfort. It is made also of the way that you want to share one blanket among three women. It is made of the tools that you create in order to protest and to block those powers that are coming to oppress you and to disperse you. It is made of time of having fun with your bodies, because you are protesting together and you are imagining your world through this work. And also it goes across, you know, the political imaginary that told us that our histories are tied to these borders that led, for example, in my context, the context from where I'm coming, that I am an Israeli and they belong to other places, even though they were there before my parents were there. So this is an image that I would like to dwell on it for another minute. It's an image that, again, I integrated it in my composition of the Family of Men. This is an image that was taken in Baghdad in 47, and this is U.S. officers, U.S. Information Service officers, and as you see, it was vandalized, with quotation mark, by people in Baghdad who protested against the partition of Palestine, which means that we cannot consider the story of Israel-Palestine as a delineated conflict that is between two sides, as I've tried to show you at the beginning, were not even two sides, but also not as a story that can be handled only among those that the state decide that they belong or they don't belong, but the state continue to dominate or control behind the borders. People in Baghdad had a claim in the partition of Palestine, and they opposed the partition of Palestine. So all this imperial story, the British Mandate, that they gave some Jews in England the rights on a land that didn't belong to them, all this story should be completely undone with a different ontology of photography. So coming back to the Family of Men from a different perspective, I became a little bit obsessed with the Family of Men, as you will see with a different project. Just a second, I think that I didn't show you. What I did is the body politic. You see, it's the same composition. Rather than making it here, for example, in the Family of Men, there was one image. I used 9 images in order to create this block. So what I did is from the Family of Men to the body politic, trying to understand the body politic not as the way that we were taught by political theory, that the body politic is the body of citizens. Hence, the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, could be conceived as everybody is free, because the body politic was reducible to those who were recognized as citizens. The same in France, the same in Israel, the same in India, Pakistan, and on and on. So this was part of the body politic. And as I said, I was really obsessed with the Family of Men because I really loved this catalog. But at a certain time, I felt ashamed to love it because Roland Barthes said that we shouldn't look at it. And then I felt like there is a way to engage with these images differently because not all of them are doing what Roland Barthes is saying that Staken is doing, because Staken cannot do so many things to 500 images of thousands of people. So this idea of authorship is also the way that we impose on photography the imperial understanding of a body politic. So this is a very iconic image of the family of men. It is iconic not only because of the image that was taken from Peru, but also because of Leone, the designer who did this colorful icon. So what I did, I decided to materialize this icon, to create a lens, because this is the lens through which we are looking at this exhibition. The entire exhibition is in black and white. And all these ideology of documentary and ideology of humanistic or humanitarian in relation to this black and white documentary is dominated by this colorful icon of Leone. So what I try to do is to start to create an object from this colorful icon of Leone and to start to look at the exhibition differently. So when I looked at the exhibition, black and white exhibition, there are images of white and black, but there is only a single image where you see black and white people together, two kids, the innocent kids. Here you see them. So what you see here, I carved into the catalog so many pages in order to arrive to this particular image where you see across the dividing line, across the color line. And what I did, I started to peruse one page after the other to see what happens when all of a sudden they are not divided into two planets, black and white, but when they are integrated into the bedroom of a black couple. It speaks differently. When the black and white kids are in this situation where the woman that you don't see here, because now you see the two boys, when a woman who killed her husband because she was victim of his violence is on trial in this image, and here you see the judge. So I explored a little bit what you see when you go through the exhibition. So what you see here from the first project that I showed you, archiving, I showed you folding, unfolding, I show you here how I carve into the catalog, because I cannot accept Staken authority, neither the authority of all these male philosophers who would tell me what I have to see in these images. So the material intervention with photography is crucial to our understanding of a non-imperial ontology of photography, unless if we want to believe that the photographer is a kind of hero and he will climb upon different, you know, objects just to catch the image and bring us the image with this kind of immediacy. You see here, these are journalists who are running to report the Nuremberg trial. They're running outside to report to the world the verdict. But at that time, when they are reporting with this kind of urgency the verdict of the 22 Nazi officers who were the 22, the trial of the 22 Nazi officers, which is part of spectacle trial, because those who are putting the Nazi regime into trial are those who are continue to maintain colonies in Africa, in Asia, and continuing to exercise violence, just to mention Kharata Galame in Algeria, just to mention Thayor in Senegal, and so many other places where they are killing people who they mobilized earlier to help them end World War II and to fight against the Nazi. They are punishing all these soldiers coming from the colony that they mobilized. They promised them that they will be decolonized after, and then there are several massacres in 45. At that moment, there are a series of trials in Nuremberg, and they are rushing to tell the world what is right and what is wrong, and then they are writing this Universal Declaration of Human Rights. At the same time, it is considered by the same imperial power that it is right to punish German women, because German women are punishable because they were part of the Nazi regime. So here you have a glimpse into a shelf of books that relate to 45, that came out in most of them in the last decade and a half. And what you can see from their title, 45, post-war, after the Reich, year zero, etc., what interests me is that all of a sudden historians understood that it's not a transition from war to peace, that 45 was a year, not just, you know, there was a leap from the war, from World War II, into the New World Order. So historians understood that. But when they understood that, and when you look at what they understood, you see that what they say about the rape of German women, and we are speaking about a mass rape of between 1 million and 2 million German women that were raped by soldiers, mainly from the Red Army, but also US soldiers and French soldiers in all the quarters, different quarters in Berlin, they have very little to say about it, and here you have the pages. 9,558 pages, I counted, only 161 addressed the mass rape, and none of the images evoke that there was a rape. So for me, this was a challenge. It was a challenge, first of all, because other Jewish scholars, women Jewish scholars, said that German women should not say that they were victims because they deserve what happened to them. And it really annoyed me. So what I try to do is to ask, what does it mean? What does it say about the ontology of photography, the absence of images of rape? And this question of the absence of images of rape preoccupied me in the civil contract of photography 10 years ago, and then in that exhibition that I did on the destruction of Palestine, the rape of Palestinian women by Jewish soldiers. And it preoccupied me here, the third case, and I assure you, it's not the only case. There are so many cases all around the world. There is no sovereign power that emerged without the rape of women. Just think about the US and the rape of black women for the emergence of the democratic America. So what I did, I opened these books, some of them, and I read from the 150 pages where they report the rape, I extracted what I consider to be a caption of an image. For example, a young girl, 14 years old, is dragged in the street, is brought to a place and is raped. There were so many photographers, male photographers in Berlin. I have seen so many photographs from Berlin in 45. None of them took the camera to take a photo of this rape. And another one, and another one, and another one. So what I started to do is to create, inspired a little bit by Malevich and the Black Square, to create the untaken photographs of these rapes. So what you see here, I inserted pages in all these books, so 45, with captions that I created from the very same books. In order to introduce into the archive a placeholder of the rape. It's not that I wanted to find 2 million images of 2 million women that were raped, but this absence is something that we cannot tolerate, not because there is an absence, because there is no absence, and there is an ideology that makes us not to recognize an image of rape in the plethora of images that came from 45 from Berlin. I'm not sure that I brought this image. No, I didn't. Never mind. So what I started to do is I read anonymous diary, a woman in Berlin, that was written throughout April 45 and the end of May, the 6 weeks where the mass rape took place. And I read with these diary images. And I read the images not in order to recognize what we see in the image, the way that we were trained to look at photograph, as if the photograph shows us an object. What I try to do is to decipher the photographic data differently. And here I started to read, for example, the clean road. Berlin was bombarded, which means that when we look at this photograph, we are looking at a photograph when women could dress up nicely and walk in the street, when capitalism already colonized Berlin and enabled German to be part of the free market. When you look at this image, we have something else. We are at a different moment throughout the rape. So I started to read the rubble. I started to read the smoke. I started to read when our rubbles were removed from entrance to houses, etc., etc. So I started to understand that if I want to push further this non-imperial ontology of photography, I cannot look for themes in the photograph. I have to read the photographs as necessarily images of rape, because this is the arena where rape took place. We are not speaking about the rape of a single woman, and then you cannot say that every place is the place. But when we are speaking about between 1 million and 2 million of women that were raped, and there were so many photographers all around, they were all urged to take photographs, but not of the rape. Which means that each and every photograph is a photograph of rape, because it contains data on the place where rape took place. So it's a different ontology of photography that counter this ideology of absence in the archive. There is no absence in the archive. There is an ideology that makes us reformulate what we see. So what I did is, rather than this magic year of 45, the new world order, the new future, what I did is I proposed a different timeline that is based on this diary of anonymous women in Berlin, and I started to read images of destruction in different ways, integrated images from Algeria, images from Senegal, to reconstruct imperial violence rather than to reconstruct the New World Order. 2 minutes. Here we are. So, potential history, collaboration as a potential history of photography. What we try to do, as I said earlier, is to look at this degree zero and not judge good or bad projects. Start to understand what is the materiality of collaboration, what collaboration is made of. And it is made of different things with which we can go back to photography and rewrite the history of photography in a way that will undermine the ground on which all those people who invested money in the market of photography, like George Eastman, like Newman, like all the other male inventors, curators, entrepreneurs, who narrated for us what is photography, we can narrate the story differently. So we created typology. This first typology that you will see it in the other room at the entrance of the exhibition is the photograph person was always there, which is the most banal assumption, but it was like struggling with almost 200 years of history of photography to say that in each and every photograph that is recognized as the photograph of X, Y, or Z, the photograph person was always there, and the photograph person did many things as part of the event of photography. This is a second cluster, a cluster in which we ask the photographer seeks to reshape the customary authorial position through the photographed person's collaboration. And here comes projects of two of my collaborators in this project, Susan Meiselas and Wendy Ewald, who are photographers. And this is the way that they try to shape their own practice. And when we started the dialogue, we started it, the three of us, around their practice and around what I did in Potential History of Palestine, what I did in the Civil Contract of Photography. And we started to elaborate this tension between projects in which the photographers are seeking for this kind of more equal collaboration, but not erasing the projects where collaboration was forced on people. Like, for example, the Scotland Yard taking photographs of the suffragists, holding their head like this in order to take a portrait. And then Laura Wexler and Lee Rayford joined us in this project, and I think we did the third and the fourth, and I think that this one is the fifth iteration, where we kept the same eight clusters that you will see here, but we integrated many other projects that helped us to understand in a more nuanced way the entire idea of collaboration. So let me just finish with two projects. This is Luc de la Haye, 95 till 97. This is a photograph that he took without permission in the metro in Paris. Here you see a series of them. I stole these photographs. He's speaking, you know, in the kind of the male artist who has a right really to take everything. The world is for him. Considering himself in relation to a previous project like this, which is Walker Evans. Walker Evans did this project in the subway in New York in the 30s. He waited 20 years because he understood that there is something violent in stealing these photographs, so he didn't publish the photograph immediately when he took them. He waited 20 years. But for Luc de la Haye, considering himself in relation to Walker Evans is enough in order to ignore the photographed persons, and this guy sued him, Ben Salah, Neji Ben Salah, and he sued him in court and he lost. So, not surprisingly, the history of photography continued to be narrated in a different way. I'm skipping. Maybe I'll end with this image. This image, it's typical of the way that the state and photography collaborate together in order to make us superfluous to the event of photography. And us, I'm speaking about a big us. Here what you see is a scene of arrest, right? We recognize Palestinians are being arrested, of course. They were born to be arrested. But what is interesting in this photograph is that this is what we see in the front, but if you look behind, see how many other Palestinians were there and how they are evacuated. See this soldier behind the Palestinian who is arrested with his, how do you call this? Baton? Baton rouge? They are kicked out, which means the most important, in order for us to continue to recognize Palestinians as the intruders, as those who are threatening the bien-être of the state of Israel, is to evacuate those with whom their presence will be recognized as something else. So the notion of a conflict is a notion that is based on the idea that those that are made two sides will not recognize themselves as standing in a common ground, even if a common ground of violence, that they have a common interest to transform it and maybe to create a different future.